Welcome back. Happy,
happy holidays. Happy,
happy holidays.
Or just happy winter if you don't celebrate anything. Happy December.
As we're recording this, happy solstice.
Yes. Oh my God. Yeah. My pagan ass. Yeah. It is a winter solstice. It is Yule. Happy Yule. Happy Christmas. Happy Hanukkah, because it's also Hanukkah.
While yes, we're recording. It is Hanukkah.
Happy Kwanzaa's next week, and Happy New Year, all of the happy things. Yeah!
Happy days getting longer after today. Really stoked
freaking
on that
Christ.
One.
Yeah, I'm kind of sick of it being dark at 4:30. Yeah, I think we all are.
Not thrilled about the whole thing.
Yes, super not thrilled. So I'm glad the days are going to get gradually longer after this lovely solstice night. Thank God. Thank God, because that seasonal affective disorder really kicks your ass after a while. Yeah.
My little special depression lamp can only do so much.
She's a workhorse. She can only do so much, though. She's trying her best.
She really is.
Just like us.
On that note.
So this episode is our kind of like end of year special. Now, we didn't come back until August, so we can't do a wrapped on like our own podcast because there's not really enough to wrap. So we are going to do your own little special Spotify wrapped version of the feeder industry here in Murica for the year of 2022. Ooh, man.
Oh boy, a lot's happened.
Oh, a lot has happened this year, and we're going to go over it all. We're going to go over some statistics. We're going to go over some special events, and we'll wrap up with our own personal hot takes and what we thought was cool that we or our friends or just our communities did this year. So... yeah, without further ado, I'm gonna rattle off some statistics to you, Lee. Let's see how you feel about these.
I'm gonna give commentary.
So specifically for Broadway this year, which I wanted to find more, but like I guess because you know it is still technically the year of our Lord 2022, there aren't statistics for 2022 out yet. So some of these are from anywhere between 2019 and 2021.
Mm-hmm.
So. This year, though, this one is true. 40 shows opened, and 4 of them were Sondheim revivals.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So yep. If you do the little maths on there, let me
10%,
make sure.
10% of shows were Sondheim.
10% of Broadway shows this year were Sondheim revivals.
I mean, we knew,
yeah.
Right?
Well, yeah, because he passed last year. Yeah. So, like, it's kind of like, oh my God, this prolific writer passed.
Right.
We gotta pay tribute to his best shows. And also, let's be honest, they're moneymakers.
They are. And some of them are pretty good.
Yeah, some of them are pretty good. I mean, let's be frank here. He's considered prolific for a reason.
For a reason.
Yeah. So, you know, and I will say, I'm pretty sure Ben Platt is in one of those Sondheim revivals. Let's... iffy about that one there after the whole Dear Evan Hansen movie issue.
Yeah.
Debacle,
I really wanted to put, I was going to put the Dear Evan Hansen movie on our Wrapped, but it actually did come out in late 2021.
Yeah, it did. Along with the prom movie came out last year as well, I believe.
Wait, right? It's already out?
The prom movie? Girl, that has been out for like a year.
Wait, I thought it
was. At least.
Oh.
My dude.
I'm not a musical theater person.
That is fine. I have residual musical theater person in me from my childhood, and that is the only reason I know these things.
I think I saw one musical this year.
I saw two
musicals this year. One on Broadway and one at Boston University.
Ooh, interesting. Yeah. I will ask you about that
later. I have notes.
We will. So... okay, those are the shows that opened on Broadway this year. That is for sure 2022 stats. But in the last 5 years, now this one's kind of sad, actually. In the last 5 years, only 28% of Broadway shows have had female producers or just non-male producers in general.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's less than a third, folks. That's less than a third.
That's bleak.
Yeah. So if you are a non-cis male producer out there, bro, we love you, we support you, get your butt out there.
Get out there.
Because we sure would love to see more people who aren't cis males, like, producing shows that are cool and maybe not about so many white men. That would be cool.
Maybe Scott Rudin doesn't have to decide what the canon is forever.
That would be cool. That would be super sexy, in my humble opinion.
Yeah.
And like I said, it was really hard to find statistics from this year because we are still in this year. They probably won't come out for a bit. So some of the most recent statistics I could find, mostly about gender disparity and that kind of stuff, are from 2019-2020. So in 2019, only 32% of leads on Broadway were women. 62% were men, and the rest were non-binary or gender unspecified. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a whole vibe. And by vibe, I mean ew. The vibe is ew. Especially because statistically, and you can look this up for multiple different years, I don't have a very specific number with me currently, most theatergoers identify as women or non-binary. Most theatergoers aren't cis men, so why are so many shows about them?
What's interesting to me, too, thinking about this is, like, I think about being in educational settings.
Yes.
Yeah. It was always, like, a bunch of girls and, like, three boys in, like, the theater programs I was in. So where are we getting all of the, like, where, you know?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Literally,
where are we getting, where are these men even coming from?
If you break down, if I start with my undergraduate class of nine theater majors at our tiny little school, which was a huge class, by the way, for my tiny little school. Let me see. There were one who is, like, mask. I believe he is non-binary, technically, but he uses he, they pronouns. So mask. Two cis white dudes.
Yeah.
And then the rest of us were women, so... six women,
yeah,
two cis white dudes, and then a black non-binary guy.
Yeah, so like nearly the reverse of the statistic we're looking at here.
Literally the reverse. And then if you look at my cohort in graduate school of seven, five were women, two were men.
Yeah, I mean, very similarly.
And the class below me, by the way, nine women.
Wow.
No men at all.
Where are these men coming from?
I don't know!
They're still grown in a lab by Scott Rudin.
Scott Rudin is growing cis white men in a lab to put into theater. I don't know what... because, seriously, at least in my personal experiences, it is so much harder to find male or mask actors.
Yes.
Like, I have one mask actor that I found through a friend, and I just, like... tap him for everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's like the only dude that I know. Everyone else is a lady or non-binary or trans. Mm-hmm. Usually trans women. I know a bunch of trans women. I don't really. I only have like one trans male actor that I tap for things. Too. I'm like, what is happening? Anyways. That's the like actor like character breakdown.
Yeah.
I think these are all for 2019. So that's the most recent I could find. I need to get.
I mean, something did happen in 2020 that kind of shook up.
Yeah. Actually, now that you mention it, that's probably why 2019 was the most recent I could really find. So only 57% of companies were run by women, which is actually good.
That's
over half.
Yeah.
And that's up from something like 40% in 2017 or 2018. Wow. So that it went up. So, like, that's a win.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see more, like, gender nonconforming and trans people in charge of stuff, personally. Yeah. Yeah. But, like, we're getting there. It's a win.
We're getting there.
Yeah. And then this one was actually really sad to me. On Broadway, only 13% of the directors were women.
Wow.
13%. And there were no non-binary or trans directors.
Yeah, it's just it's just Rachel Chavkin out there by herself.
Yeah, just holding the freaking fort. Like, I mean, jeez.
There are others, but yeah.
Yeah.
13%.
percent, that's probably, like, if you took today's 40 shows, because there are currently, at this moment, 40 shows on Broadway, and you find 13% of that, that's five.
Yeah. That's rough.
Five. That means 35 of those shows are directed by men, and five are directed by women. Like, what?
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah.
So, producers and directors, if you're a lady or trans or non-binary director, producer, we vibe with you and we support you. Get your butt out there.
Yeah.
We want you out there, man.
We want you out there.
We want you.
We do.
We really do. And obviously, here in New York, Lee and I both know, not everything is about Broadway.
Oh, gosh, no.
Hell no. People might want you to think everything's about Broadway, but the New York theater scene is way richer than just Broadway. So I have some statistics about off-Broadway, and these are actually very recent.
These are...
from 2021.
These are recent and more promising.
Yes, way more promising. So, guys, 82% of shows off-Broadway this year were new works. Completely new world premiere works.
Sexy.
Yes. Not all plays and musicals were written in the 80s, which is what I thought when I was a child. Yeah. I literally, funny tangent, I literally thought no one was writing plays anymore because every show that I did, the most recent show was like written in like the 90s.
Yeah.
So I was like, new work who? Like, who? Who's that? Who is she?
I know.
And so I'm really glad that we're getting new work out there. And for any other young listeners out there, new work exists, bro. It's here. And if you need help finding it, literally DM our Instagram. DM. We will help you because...
we'll send you.
We'll send you crap. We want people to know about new and, like, emerging work. And off-Broadway, she really be hitting it with that. Lately. And this is much better. 60% of shows were written by women or non-binary people.
Nice.
Yeah, that's over half were written by not cis men. Yay! Yay, that's actually representative of like the population.
That's like really good.
We're about that life and the director statistics. Ugh. So much better off Broadway. So much better. 54% of directors were women. Off Broadway. Which, like, there you go. That's at least half, like, I wish they had a statistic about, like, non-binary and trans directors, but they did not, which leads me. Yeah, I'd be interested in that because they included non-binary individuals in playwrights, in the playwright statistics, but not in the director statistics, which led me to believe there weren't enough to count.
Yeah.
Or weren't enough to make a significant, like, it would have been like 0.1% or something.
Right.
Which made me sad.
Yeah.
A little bit sad. Yeah. But at least it wasn't all cis dudes.
Not a bunch of dudes.
At least it's a step in the right direction. At least it's not all, it's not, what do they call it, a sausage party? At least it wasn't a sausage party.
Yeah. What a classic film.
Oh no, I forgot about, delete that from my brain.
We'll cut it in post.
Oh my God.
I've actually never seen it. I haven't either,
but I like erased the fact that the trailer existed and that there was like discourse on Tumblr about how horrible the movie was. That I definitely read because I was like 17. Okay, where were we? Oh, the statistics are just a lot better in general off-Broadway because 45% of scenic directors were women, 58% of lighting designers were women, 80% of costume designers were women or non-binary, they included non-binary people in that statistic again, 28% of sound designers were women or non-binary. That's the only one that's like a little on the lower side. Yeah, which is interesting because one of... like the my closest like people that I know is she's a sound designer. I'm like, oh, and I know a lot of like people who aren't cis men who love sound design. I mean, I myself do some sound design, not good sound design, but like I do it for my own stuff.
Yeah,
I'm like, get out there, people, sound design is fun.
Yeah, that was interesting.
It is interesting to me, because it's the lowest one, and usually people
associate
scenic designers, I think, as being, like, the lowest amount of women. And
yeah, that's what I would think, too.
Yeah. But, like, no, 45% of the scenic designers were women. Which is pretty cool, but, like, definitely not the one that I expected to be, like, the... I expected that one to be the lowest, but no, sound designers. Yeah. And then, of course, this one, another one, kind of like costume designers, probably could have guessed this one. 70% of stage managers were women or non-binary. For some reason. Yeah, for some reason, I guess in my personal experience, I don't know about you, Lee, but like most stage managers I have met were women or non-binary.
Yeah, no, same here, now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, I've rarely met a cis male stage manager.
Yeah.
Which, like, I wonder why that is.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, like, I wonder why that is. Because there is, like, a joke, I think they make a joke about it in Orange is the New Black, like, that lesbian women in theater are stage managers. And I was like...
I mean,
I guess I see the correlation. I have met quite a few gay stage managers.
There are a lot of gay stage managers.
There's a lot, actually. But it's like, why? Why? I wonder... why there aren't more men or trans people who are stage managers.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know.
Yeah. It's interesting. Costume designers, I think I could kind of spitball about the patriarchy in regards to that. Yeah. Ooh, clothes are girly or whatever the hell they say.
Right.
Yeah. But, Off-Broadway, you did a good job. Yeah.
Good for you, Off-Broadway.
Good for you,
Off-Broadway. It is interesting looking at that gap, though, in, like, the off-Broadway and nonprofit sphere, and like, why are people of more marginalized identities not able to make that leap? Not that everyone even necessarily wants to in their career, which is part of it, but to Broadway and to like the commercial realm.
Why aren't we seeing that?
You think?
I mean, I'm sure both of us could put an hour's worth of talk into why that probably is. We will not bore you with the details.
No, instead.
Instead, we're going to tell you about fun things. Fun
facts.
This is a fun episode.
Let's
do
fun facts.
We're going to do the notable facts, the notable events from 2022.
Let's
take turns on this one, Lee, since we
both
kind of...
Let's do it. Do you want to start?
I will start. So this one is very interesting personally for me because Phantom of the Opera announced its closing after 35 years, that's right, 35 years, on Broadway. And this is especially, like, weird for me because my parents saw the original Phantom on Broadway, like, the original guy who played Phantom, during their honeymoon in 1995.
Oh, wow. End of an era.
Yeah, I was
your parents like have feelings about the show closing?
My father has no feelings about anything regarding musicals unless I am involved. If I'm not involved in it, he doesn't really care. Which, love you, Dad. Totally understand. My mom has a few. She was just really surprised about it.
Yeah,
she was like,
I mean,
really?
I was too.
Yeah, I was like, I thought that would be the show that would be there when the world ended.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But
is it the longest running show on?
It might be.
Right?
I think it still holds that title, yes.
Yeah.
Not for long, I'm sure, because there's a few other shows, as we both know.
Yeah.
That I've been on Broadway for a while.
Yes, including, a little segue, Lion King celebrated its 25th year, its 25th anniversary being on Broadway. I saw The Lion King for the first time in October, and it was a delight.
Really?
That's cool. Yeah, I had a great time. I never go see the, like, really long-running shows just because I'm like, I have an idea of what this is. Like, but gorgeous puppetry, great performances. Mm-hmm. I recommend it.
Yeah, honestly, especially if you're, like, a puppet person, and if you're a puppet person, you know what we mean by that. Then I hear it is like a show you should see.
Yeah.
Because of the puppetry work.
I would wholeheartedly say, see it for the puppets alone.
Yeah, the puppets alone are a draw. Yeah, yeah, not everything that's a tourist, quote unquote tourist trap, is like necessarily a bad show.
No.
Sometimes they're a tourist trap because they're a really good show.
Yeah. Sometimes there's a reason you've been on Broadway for 25 years.
Yeah, sometimes there's a freaking reason. Yeah. Oh, our next one. I found this really sweet. So Adrienne Kennedy made her Broadway debut at 91.
Yes.
So anyone out there who thinks you are too old to start your theater career, you're not. She's 91 and she just got her first show on Broadway. So if you're like, I'm 40, there's no way. Bitch, yes, there is. Yes, there is.
Yeah, there's always time. There's always time.
Yeah, and that's, honestly, that's a good, I think that's good for people our age too, to remind ourselves of that.
Yeah. Well, and especially thinking about how like women in entertainment are treated as very disposable after, what, like 35 oftentimes?
Yeah. Sometimes that's younger, like, depending.
Yeah, exactly. Encouraging.
Yeah. For anyone who's like femme presenting in general, yeah.
Yeah. On the flip side, Jordan E. Cooper became the youngest Black playwright to have a show premiere at the Glasgow. The play is Ain't No More, which is closing question mark. But maybe not.
Maybe not, because this is really cool. I was talking about this with someone at a Christmas party last weekend. That like Queen Latifah and a bunch of other Black celebrities got together and
bought out several performances.
Yeah, and like gave the tickets away.
Yeah.
So because this show, I need to get my butt to see it. I'm broke, so I'm doing my best. But it's been critically acclaimed as one of the best shows on Broadway right now. But no one is going to see it. You have to wonder why, but I'm really glad that there are people out there with money who are doing something about this, because I have no money to do anything about anything. Yeah. So I'm glad Queen Latifah out here saving a show that is very much worth saving.
Yeah.
Like, thank you. And kind of, again, another like flip flop on the opposite coin here. Patti LuPone quit.
Yeah. Let's talk about that. So, okay. Equity made it easier to join, and then Patti LuPone was like, this isn't benefiting me anymore. I don't like that it's not an exclusive club. Goodbye?
Yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah, and then of course she kind of tried to make it about like, oh no, it's that, you know, they're not respecting people who have been in the industry for years and all this shit. And it's like, girl, no. Stop. Girl, stop.
I mean, like, I don't know. Good riddance, I guess.
Yeah, like, okay. Yeah. That's
crazy.
It's whatever, girl. Like, she'll come back when she realizes, or she won't.
Or she won't.
Or she won't, and we'll be fine. Like,
we'll be fine. There's.
Yeah, that was a whole fiasco.
Two Broadway theaters' names changed. I was gonna try to find a way to like make a tasteful trans joke in this impact, but I couldn't figure it out. Something about dead naming the theater. Don't dead name the theater. So the Court Theater is now the James Earl Jones Theater. And the Brooks Atkinson was renamed for Lena Horne.
Yeah. Awesome. Which means that there are two more theaters out there with the names of prominent Black activists and entertainers, which we are game for. We are all about
that.
Love
to see it.
Yeah. We really love to see that. Speaking of acclaimed Black performers, Jennifer Hudson got her well-deserved EGOT this year.
I don't think I knew this.
Snaps. Yeah, I found this out and I was like, oh, wait, shit, that's right.
Yeah.
Because she got, now I'm going to be a bad fan. What did she even get the Tony Award for this year? Jennifer Hudson Tony Award 2022. Help me Google. For A Strange Loop, because she was a producer.
That's, Yes.
She was a producer on A Strange Loop, which means she now has an EGOT.
Good for her.
Yeah, I'm like, you know what? Snaps. You're a queen. Yeah. I love you. good freaking job.
Yeah. Speaking of Tonys.
Yeah.
They're going to a new place in 2023. This was like just announced that they're going to be the United Palace, which is like way up in Washington Heights, up uptown in Manhattan. The past several years, they've either been at Radio City or the Beacon Theater on the Upper West Side. So this is a very interesting location change. Yeah. Lots of rumors about why that's happening. Most people are saying money. And fun fact, my college graduation, had there not been, you know, a pandemic for 3 years, was supposed to be at the United Palace.
Yeah.
Instead, it was on a Zoom call. But I would have graduated at the United Palace, where the Tonys are now being held, were it not for that silly little pandemic.
That silly little pandemic where I graduated grad school through Zoom and Lee graduated undergrad through Zoom.
Yeah, yeah. Was your graduation a webinar or was it a straight up Zoom call?
I'm not really sure. All I know is that they had like a presentation and like, instead of like calling your name and having you come up, they like flashed your picture with your name and the degree you were getting. Yeah,
that's what they did for us too.
Yeah. But so they just flashed my headshot.
Ours was like it wasn't even a webinar. It was a call. So you're only allowed to invite like three guests so that the call wouldn't get overloaded. And like people's grandparents could not figure out how to mute themselves. And it was,
they didn't even have the option for you to unmute on ours. Like they like fully turned that off.
Yeah, as it should probably work. Yeah. But it was chaos. It was chaos.
Amazing, great, and fantastic. Amazing. On a completely different note, I love that you put this in here, Lee. Leah Michele wants us all to know. She can read, actually.
She's denying the allegations.
She has even tried to make her own, like, jokes about it and her own, like, memes about it as well. Like, being like, oh, yeah, I can't read that. Or, like, making jokes about how her friend, why am I blanking on his name? He was literally King
Jonathan Groff.
And, yeah, Jonathan. She keeps, like, making jokes about how Jonathan reads all of her scripts to her and stuff. And I'm like, Leah, honey.
Fine.
Sweetie. Oh, like, sweetie. Like, we all know you can read. That's not the point of the joke.
Most of us are pretty sure you can read.
Yeah.
My thing was when she was like, this wouldn't happen to me if I were a man. And I'm like, I don't know.
I don't really, as like I a don't woman, know if human
this
person kind of.
Specifically is an act of sexism against you.
No, I think it's just an act against you as a person. Because I have heard she is racist and horrible to work with.
Really rough things about Leah Michele.
Oh, yeah. So, oofs to that.
Yeah, but she is denying the allegations.
Yes, she has denied those. She's saying she can read. So, I guess we'll have to believe that for now.
Back to how new work is just booming. I checked this today. As of right now, New Play Exchange is host to 49,543 plays by 11,253 writers. And I think if we all collectively, playwrights, tried really hard, we could get them to 50,000 before the year ends.
Yeah, I mean, I still have to put my newest play up.
Upload your worst plays, upload your new drafts. Like,
upload your monologue collections or just one monologue, the one act.
But again, if you're a student looking for something to use for your directing scenes, or you're a community theater director looking to not do A Midsummer Night's Dream for the 50th time, might I suggest, it's like $12 a year. Get yourself a little subscription.
Literally $1 a month. I say this every episode.
It's $1 a month. It's such a fantastic resource. I'm a big New Play Exchange
stan. I am a slut for New Play Exchange. And I'm not afraid to say it.
We're allowed to say slut on this podcast?
You know what? Now we are, maybe. I don't know. I don't know.
I love it. In the new year.
In the new year, we're allowed to say
we
slut.
We say on slut. I'm kidding.
I am losing my mind. Speaking again of like off-Broadway new work stuff, our last little fun fact, we wanted to reach out to our friends at the Tank. They opened
another great resource.
Yes, they opened their new attic space, which fun fact used to belong to the Barrow Group, and I taught acting class up there. So
yes, that space has undergone a lot of changes.
So many changes.
It's low, like subsidized, low key. I'm looking for the words to say that it's like inexpensive rehearsal space for
Great for emerging
independent theater artists and emerging artists.
Emerging artists, like, get on the Tank for real.
Yeah,
they are super cool and they just want to help.
We just did 8 shows with them.
First Kiss did eight shows. With the Tank.
Eight.
Yeah, count of eight. That's a lot.
So another resource that we highly, highly recommend to all of you artists out there.
Yeah, and the attic space is like a really chill like space for like readings or like new stuff that you're just trying to like get the vibe of.
Yeah,
it's a great little experimental space for that.
Yeah, there's a studio and then I think 4 rehearsal rooms as well. For readings, great for rehearsal.
Yes, so if you're looking for that, check it out. And that's our last fun fact, so now we're gonna kind of go into our personal wrapped a little bit here. So if you don't care about that, this is where you sign off, and we still love you, we promise. We still love you,
but not quite as much.
Maybe not quite as much as if you stay to hear our personal BS, but you know.
Yeah, let's talk. Brynn, what'd you get up to this year?
This year was a freaking roller coaster, my dude. I swear it's been 5 years in 1 year. As a lot of you out there probably know, things tend to come in bursts, especially for like playwrights.
Yes.
Things tend to come in bursts.
Why is that?
I don't know.
Very consistently.
Yeah.
If I have one show going up, I actually have 3, and then there'll be nothing for months.
Yeah, so I try my darndest to have something every 3 months. And I've been doing a pretty decent job of that. But still, like, acceptances or publishing or, like, writers groups, that stuff all seems to happen in bursts, too.
Yes.
Like, at the beginning of this year, I re-upped my membership to Cut Edge Theater Collective. I got accepted to Storytellers Studio early. I actually don't know if I'm supposed to say that, but I did get accepted to New Jersey Playlab Storyteller Studio. And I had a theater festival going up with Cut Edge in February. And I was applying to be a teaching artist at Roundabout and at NJPAC. I didn't get hired for either of those that time. But later on in the year, literally a week and a half ago, I did get hired to be a teaching artist for New Jersey Performing Arts Center. I am their new playwriting teaching artist.
Oh my gosh, Brynn,
which is,
congratulations.
Thank you, which I'm super excited about. And I am, weirdly enough, now on the wait list at Roundabout. Next time they need a playwriting theater artist, they are going to contact me for an audition. So
sexy.
Yeah, so like, y'all keep trying for that stuff. Like, keep submitting to things, even if you don't get them
the first
time. Keep
applying to stuff just over and over.
Yes. And, like, if they have a cover letter, like, acknowledge in the cover letter, like, I have applied to this more than once because I really want it for this and that reason. People like persistence maybe is the word, but people like determination. Perseverance. Yeah. They like, because that's what you need to be a successful artist, really, is the ability to get back up after you're knocked down. And I'll tell you, Lee, I was knocked down a lot this year.
Yeah.
There was one day that I got 4 rejection letters in one day, and I thought I was going to yeet myself off the roof of my building. I was like, bro, do I even, should I even be doing this with my life meltdown? Yeah. And my husband was like, please calm down. please stop. I got a one act published with the Coachella Review in their winter issue. Again, I got a big burst of acceptances this winter. It always seems to happen. Tell me if this happens to you. Is it always like the winter, like from like October into January that the burst is?
It tends to be, yeah. Which yeah. I guess is just like the cycle of like when maybe. Applications are happening, etc. Yeah. But like, yeah, it is true.
Yeah, because I got the NJPAC job. I got accepted, which Lee will say this too, because they did too. I got accepted to the Interabang New Works Festival for the Brick. I'm pretty sure.
I think so.
I'm pretty sure we are.
I think
I'll double check the email, but I'm 99% sure we're allowed to now. Now that it's like official, because didn't they post it on their website?
Oh, did they? I don't know.
Because like, I don't know if they did. Because funny story. I did not know I got accepted to the Brick Festival until I don't know if it was you or my friend Aaron Proctor, but you both texted me because you both got in and sent me a picture and like circled my name and said congrats, and I was like, for what?
Yeah, I sent you congrats, and you were like, what is this?
I was like, for what? What is this? Because I was at work and running around because I teach children, so I was like, what's happening? And then I was like, oh, snap. And for those of you who don't know about the Brick, they are like a pretty elite experimental theater company in Brooklyn. Yeah. Like, this is a pretty huge deal that both of us got accepted on separate projects, by the way. We are not doing a project together. They are separate projects. So it's pretty insane that happened, which is super cool. So I got a play published. I got into that festival. I'm a teaching artist for NJPAC now. So things ended pretty well. I every 3 months this year I had a performance, and I had one in February. I had one in May or June rather. It was the beginning of June, end of May. Yes. Crimson and Clover at the Tank. And then I had, what did I have?
Did you talk about your protest piece?
My protest piece? Oh my freaking Jesus. I did my digital theater protest piece because when Roe v. Wade got overturned, I decided I was done not doing anything about it. And I figured I'm broke. I can't really donate that much money. So what can I do? And I decided I could make theater about it. So I gathered a crap ton of people. And we made a digital theater piece about injustice across this country and how we're kind of sick of it, with all people that are not cis men. So we had perspectives from all different walks of life. And we all came together to be like, hey, this isn't cool. We should maybe give people rights. Maybe people.
Wouldn't that be crazy?
Wouldn't it be crazy if people had rights?
It's like everyone in this country had like bodily autonomy.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
Wouldn't that be wild?
We made a piece about it, and I spent from July until November working on this piece. Because I edited it, I made pieces for it, I produced it, I fundraised for it. I'm very happy to say at the end, every artist got over $30 for their piece. So I was so happy with that. And then now we come to December. We had our little reading of Pieta with First Kiss that nobody showed up to, but it's okay because we recorded it and you get to see the best parts of it for First Kiss Countdown, and that'll be my last performance of the year. So that's my personal Wrapped. Nice. So Lee, now I want to know all about your stuff. How did this year treat you as an artist?
I don't even remember the first half of the year. Most of the year, I produced 8 shows.
Yeah.
Over this course of 3 months, it was like 3 pretty casual readings, 2 more formal staged readings, and 3 productions at the Tank. That was crazy.
Yeah.
Learned a lot. about myself in that moment. I also spent most of the year writing and preparing to perform Ellie and Lee's 35th birthday party, a one-woman show with my dear collaborator, Ellie Strayer. We wrote and directed and starred in it together. I'm not a performer. I don't think of myself as a performer.
Same
by
here,
trade.
I get you.
I don't have that training. It's not something I do very often. So that was a really new experience for me. The show went very well. People came and they liked it. And
that's great.
All of our tech went well. So that was really nice. That was in October.
Yes.
And then I have... I did have a play accepted to the Interrobang New Works Festival as well, which is really exciting because this is kind of the first time in quite a while that someone besides my own theater company has said, like, yeah, we'll produce your play.
Relatable content,
So that's very validating. And I'm very excited about that piece in particular because it's existed digitally for a while, but we've never done an in-person performance of it. And then I guess my last thing is I have a song coming out tomorrow. Well, when does this come out? This comes out
this
on Friday.
This is coming out on Friday, the 23rd.
So yesterday I had a song released as part of First Kiss Theater's Countdown to 2023. Again, not something I don't consider myself a musician by trade. I'm very, like, insecure about my abilities.
I needed
to do something. And well, Ellie and I wrote a song for our show.
Oh, right, for your show. Okay, I remember that.
And then we were like, we kind of started talking and we're like, what if we wrote an album that's like part song, part spoken word, part sketch? So we've been talking about that and developing that, and I've started writing a little bit for it, but I'm feeling nervous because this is the first time that I've like released any sort of music into the world that's not a joke.
Yeah.
And I'm like, there's something
that.
Really cringe and really embarrassing about like writing a song.
Yeah, no, I totally
like,
understand.
Talking about your feelings.
Yeah.
So check that out if you want to.
You should.
You know, whatever. Please be nice to me about it. But
yeah, be nice.
For me, it's really just been a year of like returning to the in-person sphere and doing a lot of things that I don't normally do and like making myself really uncomfortable, I think in like a good, healthy way. But feeling like, I don't know, 2023 is going to bring even more.
It's going to be nuts. It's going to be crazy. What with, of course, the Interrobang Festival for both of us, which, by the way, my piece is a solo show and I'm performing it. So,
oh, I didn't know.
Yeah, it's a solo show version of my piece Antidotal that I've been trying to get. It's won, literally, this piece has won awards. It was supposed to get a full production in 2020, and then, of course, pandemic happened.
Yes, with...
Waterhouse Collective,
with
where
Waterhouse we met. With Waterhouse Collective, where
we met. Yeah. That piece, I made it into a solo and for literally on a one-off, like pooped out an application to the brick, not thinking anyone would read it or give a singular F about it. And I get an email that's like, you are accepted. And I was like, I am who? What? I'm who? So I have to find a director, by the way. So if any of y'all out there are so femme, and by femme, I mean just not a cis man and identify more with femme then mask, that's all that means, and disabled in any way, director, please contact me. I'm dying. Help me. I will be posting an official call on my Instagram, but also help me out, please. Dear God, I'm dying. I'm screaming into the void. But yeah, I think
I might know a director for you.
We wait, you might? Okay, we need to like conflab after this. But so that's our personal like wrapped there. If y'all were curious as to the kind of stuff we were doing just as artists and not just as your lovely podcast hosts.
Believe it or not, this podcast is not our full-time career.
No, it's not. Wouldn't that be lovely? But we ain't there yet. Maybe send the podcast to every single person you know. That would also that would be fly. Do people say fly anymore? Anyways, I'm showing my age, Lee. I turn 27 next month.
Whoa, when's your birthday?
Actually, my birthday is the 20th of January, so actually, give me a hot sec, because our next episode might come out on my birthday, because my birthday is...
Oh my god, yeah. We should do Bryn's birthday special.
Our next episode is actually my birthday.
So I think we have to talk about one of your plays.
Oh.
Is that crazy?
We did. No, I don't think that's crazy at all, because we did do one of yours, and I've actually never talked about my work on here.
We should talk about one of your plays.
Okay, guys, I'm going to put a poll, like a little Spotify poll on this, and I want you guys to vote, okay? Tell us if you want to hear Lee interview me, since I interviewed them about one of their plays.
The people are all going to say people. Yes.
I hope so. That'd be really sweet. That'd be very sweet of them if they said yes. Well, after that whole tangent, those are our personal highlights. But, like, speaking of, like, the theater industry as a whole, did you see any shows? Did you have any feelings about anything that happened this year?
Oh, God. I had mostly not great feelings about, like, generally.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's kind of what comes to mind for me as well.
I'm a year and a half out of undergrad now, where I got a theater degree. And sometimes I think about, what if I had gone to a real college, a real thing? Just because of, like, the older I get, the more I realize, like, even, like, very successful people in the industry have, like, day jobs.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like,
oh, this is just going to be, I will probably never have money.
And you know what? That is okay, because, you know, as long as you're alive and you're happy.
But I would like health insurance.
I also would like health insurance that doesn't cost me my whole entire leg. Yes. That would be cool.
So the industry, I feel not optimistic about, particularly considering, like, some of the statistics we talked about earlier and, like, you know, all the men.
all of the men.
The men just don't make me feel great. But I did see some theater this year that I was, like, really stoked on. I actually just saw A Christmas Carol.
Really?
On Broadway a couple weeks ago.
Yeah?
And it's incredible.
Really?
You know about this production? It's a solo show.
Oh, wait, it's a solo. Oh, wait, and then he plays the different. I did just hear about this. Yeah.
And it's, like, scary. There's, like, jump scares and, like, scary puppets and, like,
optical illusions. I love that, though.
It's excellent. It's only running through, like, January, like, the first week of January.
Of course.
It's so expensive now.
Of course.
But if you have the chance, highly recommend. Like, it just made me feel like, you know, the, like, sense of, like, wonder and magic that I don't often feel anymore in theater spaces.
Aww.
And then, of course, just, like, everything that my friends and, like, peers did this year. Every single, like, Friskus Theater adjacent reading. Yeah. Alice and Emmy had their play A Made Man go up at the Pit this summer. That was beautiful. I know someone who's on tour with Book of Mormon right now and having, like, the time of his life.
Hell yeah.
And who's so he's playing Alder Cunningham, and he's just, like, so perfect for the role. Like,
that's lovely.
It's been a really great year of, like, seeing a lot of my peers, like, I feel like start to get some of the recognition that they deserve.
Yeah.
That's been really cool.
That is, honestly, I know we talked about just recently our own, like, rejections and acceptances for this past year, but, like, sometimes when you get a rejection, but you see your friend get an acceptance to something else, like, it kind of makes you feel a little bit better.
Yeah, no, it gives you a little bit of hope.
Yeah, like, hey, like, for instance, again, I'm going to talk about Aaron again. Aaron, I love you so much. Aaron Proctor, who's been on this show before, who wrote Alternative Canon, which we talked about on this show. Mm-hmm. Alternative Canon is going up with a new experimental theater company in Miami. It's going to be, like, their first full production. And when I heard that, I was so frickin' stoked. And it made my day a little better, because I knew someone that I knew, who I love, who is talented, is getting their work recognized.
There you go. That is something that I really love about at least the circles I'm in theater, is it doesn't feel competitive to me.
I think, yeah.
In the sense that, like, I'm at a point where I'm not, like, comparing myself to other writers as much. And, like, you know, it doesn't feel like there's, like, limited room for us.
Yeah, I do struggle with that sometimes, but I think more often than not, I think on our dark days, we all are like, oh my God, there's not enough things for everyone. But like, there's out of the pandemic, some good things, we have to acknowledge, some good things have come out of the pandemic for theater. And one of them is like digital residencies and digital writing groups.
Yes,
there are more groups now for people to join.
Well, not just like writing groups, but like, I mean, you know, virtual productions as well, like,
and more residencies too, like the First Kiss Theater residency is all virtual with almost one in-person retreat. Like, that's so accessible.
And I think just about like the community in general, like I sort of entered like playwright Twitter this year. Like, Erin and I are actually mutuals, and I didn't know that you knew each other. But it's like really delightful to see everyone boosting each other's work and like being just so supportive like
that's why I started this podcast in the first place.
Exactly,
to talk to other playwrights, form connections, and build up other writers who weren't cis men. And you know, the more that I talk to people, and I'm on TikTok and I'm on Instagram and I'm finding other playwrights, the more I'm like, This is a good idea. God darn it.
It's good.
God darn it. Yeah. Like, yeah, I think as someone who was an actor for how long of my life? Jesus, like 20 years of my life. I feel like it's a lot more competitive when you're an actor, because you feel like you have to directly compete with other people for roles.
And yeah, you think, can't make your own opportunities in the same way necessarily.
Unless you're an actor and a writer, which if you are, by the way, you should take Amy Berryman's Writing for Actors class that I often advertise on my Instagram. Because she's great. Also has been interviewed on this podcast before, and she's amazing. But yeah, so I felt like as an actor, that's one of the reasons I burnt out from acting, was because I felt like I was constantly competing with people when what I really wanted to do was collaborate with them. And that's why it's one of the reasons I fully switched being a playwright. The other being my acting teacher sitting me down and saying, hey, look at all these publications and awards you've won for your writing. Are you sure? Are you sure you're not a
playwright?
That's a
good point.
And I was like, Chris, you know what? You might have a point. So, you know what? You find your path. And if you're an actor, I respect the hell out of you, because I have been there and it is hard. It is so hard. So like, good on you for doing that. I will say out here though, I love our little playwright director producer community, where we're not competing with each other. We just want to make shit together. I said shit, goddamn. But yeah, we just want to make stuff together, and I think that's what theater is truly about, is collaboration. That's what it should be about. It's about community and collaboration and making beautiful things together. And that's what I hope this podcast is for everyone who's listening, because while you might not be on here being recorded like me and Lee are, you are an integral part of what we do here. If you didn't listen to us, we would probably have stopped. We probably would have stopped recording if there weren't at least, because we got our Wrapped, by the way, our personal podcast Wrapped. And y'all, we're in the top 10% of followed podcasts on Spotify.
That's crazy.
Despite the fact that we only have about, and we are very thankful for, 100 very dedicated listeners and about 200 on and off listeners.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of podcasts out there.
There are a lot of podcasts out there, but you guys still like, you like us?
You like us? You like us? Do you like us?
Do you like us?
Oh my God, wait, do you like I just got your invite to join the Zencaster Club.
Amazing.
Just
great.
Got the email.
I love technology so I do love it so
much. For all of its merits, sometimes working together virtually has its drawbacks.
That is true. Maybe one day, Lee and I will be able to record in person, but currently I live in New Jersey and Lee lives in Brooklyn. So
it's tough to make the trek.
And with that, we have been talking for an hour.
But
this was a really great chatty episode. Yeah. And I might put another poll out there and be like, do y'all like the chatty episode things? Should we do one of these every once in a while?
Yeah,
that's just like us vibing.
The gossip?
Yeah. Yeah, like the gossip episodes. If you do, you know, if there's enough of you, maybe one day we'll start a Patreon and we'll do chatty episodes for our patrons. Wouldn't that be cool? What if we did have that? That would be sexy.
I mean, it wouldn't be like sexy. Like, it's not, you know, that's not the vibe for the Patreon. But
No. Oh, God. Shit. No, not like that. Not like that!
Playmates podcast is starting an OnlyFans.
No, I am a married woman! I'm a married woman. Okay, so...
I'm not.
Yeah, that's true. You're neither married nor a woman.
Exactly.
Hey. Okay, well...
Anyway, we have to stop.
We really have to stop. So... Guys, check us out on Instagram. We are at Playmates Podcast. We have a website, playmatespodcast.weebly.com. You can also email us at theplaymatespodcast@gmail.com.
Ooh, send us an email. Be our pen pal.
Yeah, and you know what? We also have a form that is on our website if you have any suggestions for guests or plays that you would like for us to cover. So go ahead, contact us if you would like. We love to see ya. And tell everyone you know to follow us on Instagram and listen to the podcast. And follow us on Spotify as well if you don't already do that.
Oh, yeah.
But I think most of you do because the Spotify rap said you do. So, yeah. But if you don't, do it.
Yeah.
All right, guys.
All right.
We love you, theater lovers. Have a happy new year.
Happy new year. Happy holidays. We'll see you in 2023.
See you when I turn 27.
Whoa. Can't wait.